Hi, I'm Aubra, and you're listening to the podcast from MinSpec, the Minnesota Speculative Fiction Writers Group. We meet monthly to learn more about the craft of writing. We also have a very active message board at www.meetup.com/MNSPEC. This episode is
It Came from the Slush Pile.
Three real slush pile readers and editors dissect submitted stories and explain what worked, what didn't, and why they stopped reading when they did. So keep listening and learn the secrets of the slush pile.
I'm Sarah Olson. I'm currently a slush reader for Apex Magazine.
Awesome. Oh, and you should probably give a plug for the group for the critique group that you're starting in January.
Yay.
West Metro.
West Metro Shorts, yeah, a short story critique group. So we'll be focusing on the short fiction for those who write short fiction from journals.
Yep, and we'll be doing the startup in January because we just figured that right before Thanksgiving we weren't getting anybody. So we're going to start them up in January.
I'm Eric. I'm Piven. I edit the Tales of the Unanticipated, a Twin Cities magazine slash anthology of speculative fiction. And the most recent issue sells in the stand for $15, but I'm selling it for $12.50 cheap. Among other activities, I host the Speculations Reading Series at Dreamhaven Books, conventions, but especially Diversicon, which is a multi-cultural.
It's being made. Are about the beginning of one of your stories, not about you as a writer. Okay? So it's just to help you improve, to figure out where the slush pile reader would stop reading. If you get trashed today, just go and write another one or rewrite this beginning to a better starting place or whatever. Use it. Don't abuse yourself with it, okay?
I'd like to say first what Hillary did is while trying to get it to about 1,000 words for each section, she's clearly made an effort to leave each of them off in an interesting place to maximize the chances of wanting to go on reading.
Yeah, and I had to cut a number of your submissions. So, but everybody whose submission was cut was notified and notified of where I was cutting it. All right. Who wants to start? And the submissions were in order that they were received. So, just like a...
Take it. Ridge Runners. And from time to time, I'm not going to mention every comma, of course, but from time to time, I'll mention some kind of point when it raises an overall issue, I think, of writing. A couple of times in this story, there's a place where you shift from one, the author shifts from one character to another, and then in the subsequent paragraph, the person to whom it is shifted speaks. That's confusing. If you're switching from one person to another in the description, the change in description should be the same paragraph as that person speaking. Apart from that, I thought this was okay. And by the way, I realize the general principle here is to say the point at which we stopped reading. And I usually, Tales of the Unanticipated, I usually don't stop reading it. It's but once a year, I have a submissions window of about a month, and which makes it manageable, as I would have given up decades ago if I had to read this stuff nonstop. And that window of a month doesn't mean that I'm agreeing to read everything and respond on it all in a month, but that's the amount of time in which people can send stuff in so as to limit the number of things that I get to about 200. And so the teacher in me wants to help people along. So I do try to... occasionally something is just so god-awful that I just put it down there. Not god-awful. There are much more often will be something that... the point at which I sort of get disengaged from it. I'm still skimming over the surface of the words, hoping to fish up something interesting that will fully engage me again. But having said that, I thought that the Ridge Runners stayed interesting throughout. You've got a couple of salty characters smarting off at each other, along with some nice description of the driving process and what they're encountering. And just when I'm getting the point of, you know, I think I've had enough of this, the cop comes along and pulls some to the side, and then the apparently UFOs appear above them at a point where you know, and that's an okay. That's the point where I'm thinking, you know, at this point, I've seen UFOs before, so at this point, I would like to have something really interesting happen. But that's okay because it's got me still engaged. The point where I left off. So yeah, not bad. And now, in fact, I found myself speculating on, since this is apparently set a little while after World War II, because he was in the war with the Germans, so it's probably near 1947 when the big spike in UFO sightings began, which then got me thinking, well, it's not necessarily aliens in here, it could be black ops, you know, military. Or... So, at the point that it cut off, I was engaged in the story, so that's good.
Do you want to do your little spiel about hats, or should I just jump in now? Why don't you go next?
Okay.
And then I'll finish with the mean professional editor hat.
So I had to decide which hat to wear, because all the places where I read very differently. For the men's spec anthologies, I would read every submission all the way through. So from the asylum... I would give it a little more slack because we were semi-prozine. At Fantasy Magazine, I saw so much slush that I had to make decisions just like that. Because we would see, on the average, 500 to 600 submissions a month. We had a god-awful month where we got 800. And depending on how many people were reading slush, we had to clear it. And we had to clear it quickly. For this, I put on my Fantasy Magazine hat, just so you know. So... you want me to go ahead and say what I did and where I stood?
Yeah. I
thought the action was nice enough, but I decided I didn't give a damn about these characters, and I stopped at paragraph 9. I realized right away that this was something that I was not going to be able to send up to the editor at Fantasy or any of the magazines where I worked. Had I gotten this in the men's spec slush pile, I would have obviously had finished it. But I didn't engage with the characters, and... maybe it's just that the time period didn't work for me or whatever, but the dialogue didn't work for me. I know that the writers tried to be snappy, but stop the paragraph now.
All right, so I read primarily dark fiction, but I'm pretty open-minded about reading, so I'm not going to, you know, think particularly Apex Magazine whether or not I would pass it on, but I'm definitely thinking of this as a professional... level writing, this would be slush I'd be reading, and I make decision, like Michael said, very quickly. So I usually try to have two chances. So I'll start reading something, I'll hit me, and I'll be like, ooh, I don't know if I like that, and I'll go on to the next time I hit something, and that's where I stop. So the first stop was he stabbed the foot feed. Because I'm picturing him actually stabbing it, not what I hope the writer intended. So I saw that language, and it pulled me out of the story, and I said, ooh, I don't know, and I kept reading. Second stop was at the end of the third paragraph. It was a whole lot about cars. I don't really care about cars. I couldn't really get into the characters right away, so by that point I'm just, yeah, whatever, next story.
All right.
And part of the point that you're all making, of course, is that it's personal taste, personal desire. Everybody's different. Your customer is different.
Right.
And people have
you have to think about not only what you like, but what your magazine likes, what your editors like, what your readers like.
Is it time for
and
the clarion story?
Particular market.
Or wait.
Yeah, let's do a couple more, and then you might hit the clarion story.
All right. Sounds good.
So we were going to jog down each time, weren't we, as to who went first?
Yes.
Sarah.
Yay. You don't hate me by now already. okay, so this is The Body Remembers, right?
Yes.
All right. First sentence was my first stop. Grocery shopping was leading cause of spontaneous craving explosion. I don't know if I just didn't get that or this was a lot about grocery shopping. Second stop wasn't until the second page, beginning of the second page. So I kept reading after that, and then it was just a whole lot of grocery shopping, and there wasn't a whole lot of action. And one of the big things I see in a lot of writers' work is action that doesn't add to the story. you have characters moving around and doing stuff, but there's no tension, there's no plot that we're driving to. It's just the characters doing stuff instead of the characters doing stuff from to drive the story forward. Why are they walking around? What do they want? Where are they going? What's the point? So there's a very big difference between action and actually action that adds to your story.
I liked the initial setup and thought things were going okay, but the opening scenes just went on too long. I read the entire selection because the writing itself was reasonably strong, but by the time I got to the end of it, I realized that, you know, you started in the wrong place. This is a classic example, I think, of a story that probably is going to have started in the wrong place. And by the end of the segment, I knew that it was not going to make the cut at any of the magazines I'd been at, which is a shame because the writing itself, I think, was pretty good. So whoever's this submission is, I would like you to go back and look at this, maybe tighten it down, maybe see if you've started in the wrong place.
Well, it starts with a man shopping in a grocery store. I haven't seen that a lot. I thought that was interesting. And of course, one thing about speculative fiction is you wonder if language is metaphorical or real. Like when he's wondering about his head going to explode, you know, it may just be speaking metaphorically.
That's probably what you want.
One of those exactly. One of those general principles to watch out for. Here we've got the italicized section. Mother Teresa would lose her patience here. Oh, great! Now the other side was moving. I assume that the italics are there to indicate quotes from his thinking. Well, I think he's not thinking, now the other side was moving. So that sentence shouldn't be in italics. It's interesting that there's this other guy who he's concerned, because he's a cop, he's concerned maybe a danger to his little son. And he sort of ends up following him around the store and then getting ready to jump into action when he thinks that he's going to take the kid outside and abuse him. So that I found interesting. And then this woman placing herself in front of the exit store, not letting him escape, and then putting her hand on his chest. The point at which the story stopped, I wanted to hear more. So worked for me.
I'm not even sure how to pronounce this. How would you pronounce that?
Chatrange.
So I'm not sure how to actually pronounce it, but I liked the opening line. I thought the opening line was really, really, really good. There was stuff here that I liked, but I thought the scenes were maybe just a little short and choppy. I have a personal bias against sentence fragments that are not part of speech, and there were some sentence fragments here. There's a few other small technical issues. I stopped reading at the start of the third section. Again, I think that there's potential in this one, but I didn't feel like I was seeing anything new, and I wasn't wow. We'll just be honest. There was no wow for me, particularly.
Well, there wasn't a wow for me either. I thought on a low level that this is pretty good. Nice job of economically creating another culture. And I was held up a little bit by the chess pieces that were as thick as a man's arm and three times as high. It took me a while to visualize that. I ended up measuring my arm with the knife. Oh, okay, so like these pieces are 4 feet high, I guess, and I've just spent more time figuring that out that could have been devoted to paying attention to the story. So why not just say it was 4 feet high? The emperor was a huge man. His fat and gray hair belied the strength of his forearms, kind of tricked me up again. I think his body fat and gray hair would make for a smoother read. But, I think this was okay. I would keep reading.
I loved the first sentence. I actually wrote yay after it on mine. You can't underestimate a good hook. Mm-hmm. You know, something where you really, just the first part of the story just brings you in and it makes you want to keep reading. Even if the rest of it isn't as good, there's something to be said about a hook. So,
can you tell us what the first sentence is?
Death came disguised as a birthday present.
Mm-hmm. That's a good sentence.
Yeah, it's a good sentence.
I had my first stop at the end of the third page, and then I kept reading. But at the end, I'm thinking, chess games are kind of cliche. And an interesting idea will get you further than a really well-written story. So make sure your ideas are interesting and different. And it's hard to do because there's a lot of work out there. So you do have to be well-read, read other people's stories, see what other people are doing. And, you know, there's... I wrote up a list of advice. I put it out on the MedSpec website. If you haven't read it, you know, maybe take a look. There is a list or a link to a website that has a list of cliches and tropes in the speculative fiction genre. And so that's a good place where you can take a look and see what's been done a lot. I've read a lot of chess game stories, and I don't think we've ever published one. At Apex. And I wrote here in my notes, well, I actually wrote notes on that, so that's actually good, because I got to the end and I thought about it. And the beginning was a good hook, but I began to question the story throughout. So there were things about it that I was like, well, really, is this character believable? Is this action believable? So there were things that pulled me out. I don't have any specifics written down right here, but I would have rejected it at the end.
When I came to the end of the Clarion workshop, I did as an experiment. I wanted to track all the stories that had been went through our workshop just to see what would sell and what didn't sell and that kind of thing, because I was really curious about that. And the stories that everybody loved, everybody in the group loved it, we all enjoyed it, we all had pleasant feelings about it, those either went nowhere or they went to very small press publications. The ones where we argued, where basically three-quarters of the group hated the story, hated it with a passion. This was the worst thing they'd ever read, and the other quarter were defending it just as passionately, and so, you know, only one in four people liked it. Those were the ones that broke out first and sold pro first. And if you think about it, those stories were getting a reaction from everybody, with one-fourth of the group positively, you know, loving it, which meant that, you know, if one in four editors has the same kind of reaction, that's going to be the kind of story that's going to break you out of the slush pile and be a breakthrough for sale to a pro market. So please keep in mind that, you know, every editor has individual tastes, and what one person says they'd stop reading at, another one might go, oh, I want to read the rest of this. I want to get involved. So, yeah, that's
question on that. Do you think that those authors benefited from that debate of the different writers and actually changed their stories, or were those stories pretty much the same stories that they had at the end of the...
I saw them. I read the publications. I tracked them down. They were pretty much the same.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the authors were very much of the one quarter that liked their own stories and decided to cling to their own vision. I mean, which I thought was good, that they clung to their own vision in that case, and they didn't write out the part, the edginess of it, the part that actually made it interesting. There was very little change. And it was really, as I said, it was really interesting to see which stories sold pro out of that list. So. All right.
Next turn, go first.
11 minutes late. I thought this is intriguing. It's kind of got the Masterpiece Theater kind of feel to it, you know, upper crust garden party. But then there's this hunt for some object, which is being made difficult by the fact that the characters had been displaced 11 seconds in time. And then they catch something in a butterfly net. And this woman says, bury this in the yard, Comfort, as far away from trees as you can. And you wonder, what is it that's being buried? Yeah, this held me interest throughout. It's charming. It's got sensibility. I don't say that every day about a story. It's got sensibility.
Is it me now?
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things I started doing when I started reading Slush was I'd read a whole bunch of stories, and then I'd wait till the next day, and I'd scroll through the list of them and see which ones I remembered. And the ones I remembered were the ones I considered passing on. So even if a story was well-written and it was good and I enjoyed it while reading it, if I didn't remember it the next day, it wouldn't get past me. Unfortunately, I didn't remember this one looking at it now. I read these right away when you sent them out, and I haven't looked at them since for this very purpose, to see which ones I remembered reading and I can look at and go, oh, it was this story. And I'm looking it over now, scrolling through it and going, okay, yeah, I kind of remember this, I remember that. But this one wasn't memorable enough for me. My first stop when I first read it wasn't till, let's see, 1, 2, 3, halfway through the fourth page. So that's good. And I think I finished it after that. My only note at the end was 2 miracles without explanation. And I'm not sure what that's about because I don't really remember the story. But actually, it was Eli who told me about the miracle rule in speculative fiction, where your readers will allow you to have one big miracle, and then anything after that, they start to question it. So you have to explain your world and build the world so your reader can comprehend it. But if you keep adding these things, and oh, now this person comes back from the dead, and this person does this, then your people, the readers are going to be pulled out of the story. They're going to start to go, "What? Why don't you just do that right away? Why can't you do that? If you can do this, can't you summon this or that?" So something to do with that is what my comment was. And I'd have to read the story again to figure out what exactly I was talking about, but that's where I'm at.
I liked this one. My first note was more please. I thought this was the kind of quirky thing that Fantasy Magazine would probably have liked. At the point where I stopped reading, which was at the end of the segment, what I would have done now as a slush reader is I would have gone to the end of the story to make sure that the end holds together, because a lot of times I would start something, I would really enjoy it, and then I would go to the end, and the end had completely fallen apart. So I would go check the end to see if the end holds together, if I think the end looks like it's going to hold together, and then I'd go back and read the whole thing, because your next biggest danger is you're going to sag in the middle. But this one would have probably have gotten a full read from me, unlike the other ones. So as long as the author didn't lose steam, they've still got a chance.
It's mine.
Yep.
Ooh.
Oh.
Okay, so Prelude, is that the name of it?
Looks like the Uber title we don't have.
Okay. There's a lot of names. Names of things, I don't know what they are. Dreadnoctarian, Gestrial. Too many names in the beginning. I stopped in the second sentence first, and the second paragraph was my second stop. I couldn't keep track of what was going on. Yeah.
It looked like a script to me, which immediately put me off. And then when I started to try to read, there's so much stuff front-loaded. So many, again, strange names, so much exposition. The writer was doing a lot of telling me stuff, but not really showing me anything. And again, I noted, is this supposed to be a script? I stopped reading at the end of the first paragraph, scanned a few more paragraphs, saw that it continued to be front-loaded with exposition and looked like a script, and said no.
I'm sorry to say that of the 11 submissions, this is the one I was least fond of. It seems to me to be a good example of what Michael was talking about unnecessary action. At the beginning, we've got on the first page or so, there are names, there are actions, there's firing of projectile weapons going on. We don't know anything about the issues. You know, if it was the Nazis against the Brits, then there'd be some scintilla of involvement. Okay, good, the good guys versus the bad guys. But in this case, we don't know anything about them. So I got nothing out of it on the first reading. I did give all these a second reading. And in this case, I liked it a little bit in the second reading. And the point at which I liked it a little better is halfway in. In the calm night, a thin mist envelops the oasis and the surrounding desert. Soft moisture develops on the lush trees within. That's good writing. And at that point, we're cutting to the smaller group, presumably the two combatant forces, a small number of people, and they're having somewhat more personal exchanges of conversation. It's a little more human. So if you go a lot farther in that direction and away from the direction where it begins currently, you might make a story out of it.
And one thing about action, too, is you need to have some sense of character before they start doing stuff. Otherwise, we don't care, especially if it's like life or death.
Yep.
We don't care if your characters die if we don't know who they are.
Right. You've got to give me a reason to care about the character before you threaten them with death, mutilation, and zombie ninjas. So,
I don't know. Zombie ninjas might be all right.
Yeah, that might keep me going.
Zombie death ninjas.
Little bundle of joy. Okay. I liked the premise, but it got repetitive very quickly. The constant, because I want a kid, turned me off the story. Because that seemed to be, you know, I got that natural childbirth is unacceptable in this society very quickly. In her constant, because I want a kid, because I want a kid, because I want a kid. Okay, we know that. Get me to the meat of the story. I probably would have continued to scan through the story, but I don't think it was going to make it. Because I want a kid.
I can hear what Michael saying. I can see the validity of the criticism, but on my grounds, I liked it. You know, it's a real issue. It's about something that matters. It kept me reading. I don't really seem to have written any criticisms of it.
I read it all the way through without stopping, but at the end of it, I didn't really remember it. I just scanned through it now, and I kind of agree with Michael. And
I wanted to like it.
Yeah.
I really
it's one of those that makes you sad that you don't like it more than you do.
Yeah.
Who's first now?
I can't keep track.
Eric is. I went first.
You went first last time, so it's me.
Okay,
Perfect Stranger. Am I right? Is it Perfect Stranger?
Yes. That's what I got.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the person who contains two sides of the same personality, as it were, which allows him to do. Here's an exchange. We're two aspects of one core person. When one sleeps, the other can remain alert. When we are both alert, we can coordinate, do different things at the same time. Writing with both hands? Yes, I like that. Or tracking and firing at two different targets at the same time, a much more useful skill. I thought this was okay. The narrator is an interesting character. One of my general editorial principles here, combined with straight brown hair, cut long enough for a bit of a ponytail is a concession to Sheenan, not many people would give her a second look. That's a sentence with subject-object problems. You need to break it up into two sentences so it flows properly. Apart from that, I kind of like this.
I like the concept of it more than I liked the telling of the story. I think the concept's really cool. I'm having to skim this to remember what happened, but I remember, oh yeah, that was kind of neat. That was a good idea. But I'm not really sure, thinking about it from a week or and a half ago or however long it's been, what actually happened. But good idea. And I read it all the way through without stopping.
I almost recuse myself because I've read other things with these characters before, so I am aware of what is going on. If I had come in cold, I might have been a little confused by all the names and stuff, and the feeling that we kind of jumped into the middle of something. I thought the writing was really strong, though. And again, I would want to like this. It seems to me to be part of a greater thing, and so I would be concerned that maybe this would be. You know, we're talking about short fiction slush piles primarily, and I would be concerned that this is part of a greater novel or something like that. It was solidly written, but if it came to me in a short fiction slush pile, again, it would be one of those things where I think I like it well enough, but I don't know that I could send it on up.
Mine?
Yeah.
Debut. So I last woke with a start was my first stop. First sentence. Waking from a dream is the ultimate cliche beginning. Don't do it. Because most editors will stop right there. Don't do it. Second stop was right before chapter one. We've been introduced to two characters right away. Not sure where they're coming from, how they relate. Then you have the point of view shift in chapter one, and that just threw me out.
So I made notes of, I'm pretty sure that this is the start of a novel, not a short story. But even if it is, it starts with too much explaining. Mm-hmm. I didn't have something or someone to latch onto, and I didn't have a reason to care quickly enough. So I would have, I scanned through it, but again, there's all stuff that I need to know eventually, but I don't need to know it right now. I don't need to know it on the front end. So too much exposition up front.
I'll support that. The problem here is that the character Belle is a trillion times more interesting than the two other characters introduced in the first two paragraphs. So it clearly should start with Belle. Who's this person whose parents are goths and who herself, I think she starts turning into a vampire. That part of it is cool. It's not clear to me why the other part is even needs to be there. It's interesting that when this tooth suddenly pops out of her mouth to be replaced by a vampire fang, her best friend remarks that they can put that back in, which tells me that this is maybe not exactly our world. If your tooth pops out, the solution is to put it back in your mouth. But, lose the first two paragraphs, and the rest of it's charming.
Yeah, make sure you understand what a prologue is good for and what it's not good for. If you're going to have one, make sure it's for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm. Most guys against them.
Yeah, most editors do not like prologues.
They usually have exactly the opposite effect to what is intended by the writer, which is to decrease interest in what's coming or they're doing for us.
Or to confuse the heck out of us.
Yeah. Is it okay to ask questions or?
Once we're done.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on to the thought. And we've only got three stories to go, so it won't be long.
Yeah. Okay, what was the name of this one again?
Heaven forbid.
Okay, first of all, is heaven misspelled wrong on purpose? Because that immediately is like a huge red flag to me right there.
I didn't correct any spelling.
Okay. It's got two
B's in
heaven, and there should only be one in heaven.
I deliberately did not correct any misspellings as they came into the
And so that, that thing, immediately so. Struck me as like, which then immediately made me start looking for technical issues, which I found. And because of that, I never engaged, and I stopped reading at paragraph 5.
And I think the main problem is it's in the title. I mean, the spelling error was in the title.
Yes.
Which is the first thing you see.
Yes.
The one way you could make that work would be if in the first paragraph you have something comparable to make it plain that you're doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
Yes. You've got to explain to me why that happened. If it's on purpose, why that happened immediately. Because now I'm biased against you now.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really focus on that. I like this. An interesting advancement in tech. We've got this guy serves his takes his girlfriend out to this posh restaurant under the sea, and she assembles for herself this salad of all kinds of neat stuff, and then he goes through and takes the stuff out and just leaves her the lettuce, and she's disappointed by that. But he's got this device that can simulate visuals of something else yummy, and she says that she had something in her personal tech that could have done that 10 years ago, but it then demonstrates it's got the odor, it's got the taste, and I thought that, it's a nice bit of science fiction, good extrapolation, I thought, and I liked the characters, what I've got them.
My first stop was at the end of the first paragraph, because I didn't like the "you are so in trouble" eyes and the "so you haven't figured what I'm up to" smile coming right away in the first paragraph. It was a little just too much for me. I didn't like it. But after that, I read through it. And it wasn't a wow for me. I think maybe if it was condensed, it took a while to get into where the story was going and what it was about. They're just kind of eating dinner at first, and I said, okay, where are we going here? I want to know. I need a hook or something to pull me in to make me excited for what's coming up next, and I wasn't sure what was coming or if anything was coming. And at the end, it was cool, but I think if it would have been introduced earlier, maybe it would have been more exciting. I don't know.
Try first?
Who's first?
We should have had a hat.
I think I'm first.
You are back to you again.
Silver Strand, chapter 1. I don't seem to have written anything on the manuscript here. No, I think it's competently done. It explores another culture. I like stories that do a non-stereotypical portrayal of other cultures. It hasn't fascinated me yet in those 1,000 words, but it hasn't done anything to make me lose interest either. So it would depend on which hat I was wearing.
My first stop was the first sentence. I wasn't thrilled with it. I think the purring kind of threw me off.
A lizard purring, right?
Yeah, and then I'm trying to figure out what's going on, and there's more purring, and it was just confusing for me, I think. Second stop was at the beginning of the second page.
Again, I have to give the disclaimer of I'm familiar with these characters in another place. This looks like the start of a novel to me, and if it's the start of a novel, I like the writing and the premise well enough that I probably would have kept reading for a little while longer. If this is a short piece, it's taking entirely too long to get started. And really, that was pretty much my entire notes about it, is depending on which animal it is, it depends on what's going to happen now. If I'm holding a novel, if I'm holding 90,000 words, I'll probably keep going because I can be a little more forgiving. But if this is a short piece that's coming to me, if this is a vignette from a larger thing, I'm probably done because it's taking too long to get started.
I would support that.
Yeah.
They're going.
Ooh, last one.
Mine?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Witch Hat Tower. First sentence, my first stop. Climbing's not enough of a hook for me. Trying to remember what this one was about. Second stop was the third paragraph. I think there was just a whole lot of action, and I didn't know who the character was, so I didn't care.
Yeah. I thought the writing was reasonably strong. I read it as being yet another start of another novel. I just didn't get hooked, though, unfortunately. I stayed with it because technically I thought the writing was going really good, but there was no hook for me. I didn't get drawn in. I didn't get pulled in immediately. And so if this is a novel, I might stick with it for a few more pages, but something's going to need to happen to engage me and hook me with this story, or we're done.
A technical point. There are what appear to be paragraphs, separate paragraphs in this thing, but there is no indentation. When you get to a new paragraph, tab over. Don't do a quadruple space. Don't get a new paragraph.
That may have been my fault in the formatting. I don't know.
Okay.
The formatting was blown up when it got to me, and I repaired it.
Apart from that, I would agree with what Michael's been saying about the. This would probably be okay as beginning of a novel, but for a short story, self-contained short story, you feel kind of slow. You could probably start. The tough way would be to just lose the dream altogether and start with her when her relatives arrive. But if
always lose the dream.
Less nasty than that would be. It would be strengthened by just losing the first sentence, one foot in front of the other, climbing. The rope creek, this Pandora lever, was served 90 degrees from the grass below, is a stronger open.
Yes.
Yes.
There you go, you've been judged.
Yeah, and it was tough. I had a story that I slipped in story begin that I slipped in, so I got my share of slapping as well.
You know, the thing is that I only really remember seeing like maybe a couple of submissions that I thought were bad, and bad is very subjective. For the most part, there was a lot of very strong writing. There was a lot of very competent writing. There's a lot of stuff here that close is not good enough with professional level magazines. That's the problem. You can't just be as good as the people you're reading in those magazines. You can't be close. You have to be better than those people, especially if you do not have a bunch of professional sales already, because you are competing against big name pros. And point blank, the editor at Realms of Fantasy, Shauna, told me point blank, given an equally good story between somebody like Jane Yolen and somebody like me, she will take the Jane Yolen story because Jane will sell magazines. It's a business. You have to remember that too. So you have to be better than the professionals who are selling to that magazine, at least the first couple of times. And that's unfortunately, I think, what has happened here, is that I didn't necessarily see anything that I felt like was better. There was one story in here that I decided I was going to go all the way to the end with and check. A couple of others that I really desperately wanted to like. And it wasn't that they were not competently put together and competently written, but they just didn't stand out for a professional level magazine.
Although, on the lest you lose hope.
Yeah, don't lose hope.
Every editor is constantly looking for good new writers.
Yes.
Yeah, and wanting to publish the first story by them. And it's one thing, tells me I anticipated. If I'm getting near the end of selecting for an issue and I notice that I've only accepted one story by somebody who I've never printed before, I'm going to take a second story.
Yeah,
and I mean, keep in mind that even slush readers, you know, we're usually not paid. We do this in our free time. We're not writing, you know, during this time. We're doing this work, and it's great opportunity to learn what doesn't work in writing and sometimes what doesn't. But we genuinely like to read really great stories. We get super excited when we read a great story. Yeah. We want you to
we
do well.
We want that, Jim. The thing is that we're not sitting behind a computer wanting you to fail. We don't want you to fail. I don't want you to fail. I want all of you to succeed. I want to see that Jensen. I was telling this to Sarah in the car. I was there for a long time before I got. I mean, I sent stories up to the editor. Don't get me wrong. A long time before I got the story. I'm like, oh! I have to go straight to Kat with this. Kat, you have to do this right.
And breakthroughs happen. I mean,
yes.
Breakthroughs happen all the time.
I would suggest reading slush, quite frankly, because you will see a lot of stories very quickly, and you will very quickly see where stories go wrong.
And I think for a lot of you guys, especially, I think starting the story in a different spot may be all that's necessary for you to pass that first level.
It's one of the most common
mistakes.
The two most important things are the beginning and the end. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to have a good beginning to hook us in, and you have to have a good ending.
The choice between a story that is perfectly well executed, professional terms, but says nothing new, and a clumsy story that is original. I will work with the writer who is original.
Yes.
But there was a hand up there.
Well, I just wanted to make a comment that goes along with this, is that something that I always hear a lot is editors say, I'm on the side of the story.
Yes.
And that has helped me a lot in my writing. You know, it still hurts like hell when things get rejected, but it really helps me to remember that it's not about me. They aren't rejecting me as a person. They, you know, they're doing business with a story.
Mm-hmm.
And if the story isn't their evil layers plotting how to make my life difficult, except all they care about is the story.
Rejection is just part of the business.
How many rejections have your story sale, or second story sale, sorry, it was 43 bounces. It wasn't a bad story, but it was a story that didn't fit anywhere.
I've been in some other writing groups, and there have been people in those groups who are better writers than I am. Just that simple. More talent, more skill, better writers than I am. but they didn't make any sales. And I'm not as good a writer as they are, and I've got 80 short fiction sales and a novel and some novellas. It's not because I was a...
I can't do this. This happened to a friend of mine who just couldn't. Don't let that be you.
Don't
let that be you. I'm seeing some faces of people I know submitted something in here who, and believe me, people who have had some pretty... Because I'm the only person who knew what everybody submit. Who a lot of what followed the sections was even better than what we had in this segment. We just had to cut it off at 1,000 words. Please don't let this stop you.
And think about it. You know, I was coming from, this is what I do for the magazine. This is my job. I'm putting my personal reputation online every time I pass a story on to the editor.
So if I pass it on.
Some, I want to print this. This is going to be the next big thing. Mm. Happens, but...
All right. So do you want to open up the...
Where you were going to...
Well,
but you saw it, and you can learn from that.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
I was worried about going in.
And all of the editors that I got
another word,
the information from, you know, we read all this slush, and we sometimes we'll post little snippets on our blogs, or we'll put things out on Twitter, but, you know, do people ever really read it? So this was kind of, I just told them, okay, send me all your tips, send me all the things you complain about, and I'll compile them in a document and put it out there. So hopefully it helps.
And I want to thank everyone who was courageous enough to submit.
Yes.
I honestly thought I was going to get more submissions for this since there was such an interest in this one. And only 11 of you manned up, womaned up, authored up, authored up to actually put yourselves through this.
Well, it's a scary thing because you're looking right at the person who's going to reject you, quite frankly. You know?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So, and I've gotten rejections of the question that I'm a speaker of the native speaker of the English language. So, you know, and you know how well I write.
Yes.
You know how well I write.
I asked once if English was my second language and a rejection. Kid you not.
So, you know.
And then I read what I had sent and I'm like, I think this might have been the wrong file. Crap. Is English my second language?
Do I know another language?
Jesus,
I don't even know.
I speak Southern first, don't I? Oh.
Do this panel again in 6 months. More people will have gotten their courage by then.
I hope so.
I think we should. Yeah, you know,
should we make this a regular thing?
I really think that slush reading has made me less sensitive about my work because I can look at other people objectively now and say, and I wish people would be more editorial with me to look at me and say, I stopped right here. I did this. This is how an editor would see it. I would love for that, but nobody has the skin for it. You know, it's tough.
It
still hurts, but I want to know what the editor's going to say when he reads
my book. I think if we do this once a year, we'll leave people hungry for more as opposed to burning them out.
Well, as opposed to burning them out.
Yeah, once a year, it sounds great. And
just in time for Christmas.
You guys should. Merry Christmas, guys!
Merry Christmas,
I got the this story doesn't work for me. Oh, and by the way, happy holidays.
At Fantasy Magazine, we stop reading in December because we don't want to send out rejections over the holidays. I have gotten them. I got 3 on Christmas Eve once. Yeah.
I got one on Thanksgiving morning.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
I'll make sure not to read slush over Christmas.
No, don't.
Yeah, and I should say that anybody who submits to Mr. Heidemann will get more feedback on their story than they'll get from any place else. Though some places, some people do give feedback. I mean, I was stunned at how Gordon Van Gelder gave me personal feedback on every story I submitted. It was a sentence. It was a sentence, but it was really informative. I mean, he had the, it didn't grab me. It didn't hold me, which made me just know, grab me, I didn't have a good enough hook, hold me, he didn't get all the way to the end, or I really loved X, but didn't like Y. And those were his three most common rejection tropes. And whenever I got, I didn't like X, but I loved X, but didn't like Y, I knew he'd read all the way to the end, and I knew what threw him out. And that was really helpful. I think that sometimes the most helpful place is to know where an editor would have stopped. I wound up starting a story in a different spot after the Worldcon Writers Workshop that I went through, where he basically drew the line across my story and said, it's a real shame that I would have stopped reading here because The rest of this is pretty darn good.
Yeah. And putting it in the wrong place is probably the most common mistake I saw.
Well, you oftentimes don't know what your story is when you're writing it the first time. Right. You find out what your story is when writing it. And then once you find it, you have to be tough on yourself and say, no, it should start here.
Yeah, it has to start here. But really, whenever I finish a short story and put it away and then come back to it later, that's the first thing I look at, is did I start in the right place? Or did I put a whole lot of exposition, world-building, other crap up front that the reader doesn't really need?
Yeah.
And related to this and to that, for the greater good of the story, you can take out what is a perfectly good passage in and of itself, and you can use it in another story. You don't have to get rid of it.
You can save it, put it somewhere else. Yeah.
I cannibalize stuff all the time. Any more questions? Come on.
Well, I had a half question, half comment, which is, kind of, guys, it seemed to me that a lot of the comments were geared to, in the captioning, I don't care if they were killed, but, and so, I guess I think a lot of things from what you guys have said, the panel has said, but the biggest one is, the character by the first 1,000 words needs to drive the story by then, and if not, you will probably be smushed. That's the question.
I think I think I need to be engaged with your character in about the first 200 words.
Yeah.
Or you're in trouble. Because I don't have a lot of time as a slusher. And frankly, short fiction, you don't have a lot of time as a writer to make me care about that character. And so if you can't, you've got more time with novels. With novels, you still got to set the scene and the pace and the characters. But with short fiction, you really got to hook the reader right away. I mean, you don't have a lot of room. I don't have a lot of room as a slusher. The reader doesn't have a lot of room and time. So there's just not a lot of space. And so you really have got to make me care about what happens in your story and with these people and with your premise very quickly.
But hooking the reader does not necessarily mean starting with a lot of action. Well, often made to start in the middle of the story thinking that this will hold them in. Now you should figure out where the story begins and begin where it begins.
And just find an interesting way to bring us into it. Like the one with that where we all liked that first sentence. The death came.
That's a great first sentence.
That's enough.
There are a variety of things. Like Roald Dahl, just to magnificent writing, you'll keep following even if there's nothing much going on. But
a beautiful image or something can bring you in just as well.
Yeah.
There was a question from Ricky.
Yeah, I wondered if you could talk a little about some of the common characteristics of the stories that wow people.
From me?
Not from this one, just
in general?
Characteristics of stories from
wow. That make me go wow. Extremely tight writing, and yet whatever the author did, and if you could teach this and model this, lots of people try to teach this. There's books, you can buy books until the end of time about how to write. And some of them might have some good advice, and some of them, a lot of them are probably just crap. But for whatever reason, the author hooked me with the words, with the construction of the sentence, with the sudden characterization, with the world. They drew me into their world. They transcended the page. I know that sounds unhelpful, frankly, but the story transcended the page. And so at that point, I'm seeing it in my mind now, so much so that I'm really not seeing the words anymore, even though I'm still reading. And it's different for every editor. There are stories that I have felt that way about that other people have been like, whatever.
I think uniqueness has a lot to do with that. Someone who has a unique way of telling the story, be it voice, style, cat, beautiful prose, that brings you in, and it's her thing. That's what she does.
That's what she does.
Tells an anticipated for openings, the Egyptian Cat by Catherine Lunda. Eric had turned over the last page of the manuscript with a sigh. Somehow a collection like hairballs over in his mouth should have been more fun to edit.
There, you're in.
Would have voted Anders Regan most likely to become a god, but what did they know?
So you're in right there.
Yeah, make us feel something. Make us laugh, make us cry, make us
evoke a strong emotion, even if I'm angry at you. Even if I'm saying, I don't like this crap. But if it's well-written crap,
unless
it's
about dead babies or cannibalism or Catholic priests sexually molesting little boys.
Don't give me priests sexually molesting little boys. Don't give me dead babies. What are some other things we don't want to see? Don't
get any priests. Let's
see dead babies.
I'm sick of zombies. If you're going to do a zombie story, it better be fantastic. Yeah. It better be the best zombie
or
story
vampires.
I have ever read.
Zombies
yeah.
and vampires are...
And yet they you still see
and
lots
yet,
of zombie and vampire stories?
Zombie babies?
Because they're ugly zombies. Yeah. Oh. Austin zombie.
You know, I actually enjoyed the anthology Unicorns vs. Zombies. That was a fantastic anthology, and I think the reason why I loved it was two editors were trying to prove that in unicorn stories or zombie stories were inherently superior and they were in battle with one another, which meant that all the zombie stories had these soft, fluffy sides to them in this anthology, and all the unicorn stories were really gritty and dark.
Mrs. Pretty Pants.
Yeah, Mrs. Pretty Pants. Yes.
Had me laughing.
And it was
crazy.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I actually liked every story in that anthology as a result. I don't like zombie stories, and I tend to not like unicorn stories for totally different reasons, and yet because they tried to take on the aspect of the other, I think it became really fascinating. That was a good anthology.
It can be done. You just have to be super awesome.
It's going to be a very hard sell, though. Talking cats are a hard sell.
Any talking animals are a hard sell.
Talking cat novels are sold every year.
I don't sell talking cat stories.
Just a comment, if you don't have time to be a slush reader, you could also just critique a lot to get the same kind of sense for what works and what doesn't work. I saw the attendance numbers for the critique sessions after this are drastically lower than the number of people who are going to be here for this part. So, you know, attend the Manuspec critique sessions. Also,
critics.org
online is a great place to read this.
Even if you don't have something to submit, go to the critique sessions and oh, your fellow writers.
Yeah.
You know, you can still learn from it. You'll learn a lot from it.
Absolutely. I think I probably learned more being a slusher and a critiquer than from any book, magazine, whatever, because you see the words, you work with the words, you figure mistakes very, very quickly. So I can go, yeah, wow, no wonder that didn't sell.
You see the cliche overdone, I'm never going to do that, unless I can really
well,
do it really amazingly
well.
Don't
let it paralyze you as a writer, either.
Karen Clarion, et cetera, that thinking that they're going to have to...
There are a lot of stories where you all said, very competently written, very solidly written, just not interesting enough. And what I see a lot in critique groups is tend to focus a lot on the technical aspects of the writing, and so the tightness, which is a really a technical aspect, but is not entirely a creative aspect either. You know, I know that's because a lot from being involved in writers' critique groups. But how on earth can you teach how more awesome?
That's Cat Valente.
It's easy for Cat to say be more awesome because Cat is more awesome.
She is more awesome.
Keep learning,
you know.
I guess my question is, how do you teach someone? How does a writer become more interesting?
Yourself, don't settle for what you're good at, but keep trying to actually do new stuff. Because, frankly, I've watched, but he keeps writing, and maybe the stuff that they first submitted was just awful. Tobias Bukel was the worst author in Clarion. Awful. His stuff was rotten. And my God, he's one of the most successful people who came out of that workshop. I mean, every time we got a Toby story, we were like, oh no, oh God, we're going to... But he cleaned up his stuff. He sat through some really awful critiques from the rest of us. Mm-hmm. And he was one of our breakthrough boys because he kept going.
Yeah.
He kept going. And his stuff just kept improving and improving.
You've
got
to have a really thick... Now, when I say, this was very competently written, blah, 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 is the underlying there is maybe... This is very competently written, and the writer can now write very competently, and they need to challenge themselves, and they need to stretch. And the thing is that you're not used to doing, especially if it's something you like in another writer, it's perfect to try and write in another writer's style for a while, to see how they do it. It's also perfectly fine to work in homage. But I see a lot of, and I've been absolutely, utterly guilty of this, people who are very competent writers and can make a very construct a very competent story, but they're not challenging themselves. And since they're not challenging themselves, they're not growing. So I would challenge you to figure out what you're good at already. Look into your writer's toolbox. Say, I do this thing, what don't I do well? And focus on that. And really, really stretch for that. And then take it to this. How am I doing on this thing, this theme that I'm going for? Or this.
Badly, so you kind of pull back on your critique. And I'm totally guilty of this too, because I never talk to people like this in a critique group. I stopped here and I didn't even bother reading your story. The more rapport you get with other critiquers, the more honest you can be. And I don't have that yet with anybody, and I would love to. But I think that thick skin, if you can show I have a thick skin and you have a thick skin and we're going to sit down and we're really going to be honest with each other, I mean, that would be a really great way to kind of move forward. But how do you get there? I don't know.
You
got
to find
those
people.
Yeah.
Oh.
One of the entries people commented on was especially Mike, you commented on spelling errors, slices.
Grammatical issues.
But I noticed that didn't exclude it from, say, Eric liking it and reading all of it and saying this is a really cool idea. So I'm thinking, you know, having a compelling story is perhaps more important.
I would tend to agree with you in general. Is more important than the technical aspects, because the technical aspects, you find somebody like Eli, or who did our copy editing, or my wife, who nerfed that on a pretty regular basis, who will teach you and do pretty much every submission. I would do the same thing, for instance, with Sky Tenant Waters. But with Fantasy Magazine, and probably with Apex 2, we don't have time to fix your technical issues. You have to be as technically perfect as you can be right off the bat. Now, little small things are not going to get you kicked out immediately, because we are going to have a copy editing process. But if there's a whole bunch of problems right up front, we're going to be like, no.
Yeah.
We don't have time.
Yeah.
We
don't just misspell your title.
We just don't have time. I wish that was not the case. But when you're working for a magazine that is going through 600 freaking submissions a month, you just don't have time to rewrite things that are close. You need to be.
And you can afford to be picky. You're going to find enough stories
exactly.
to publish. You're going to find too many stories to publish.
I'm seeing 600 stories a month. At Fantasy, we were seeing an average of 500 to 600 a month, and we were publishing 60 a year. Okay, there's your odds right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know, we're just broken the tears.
Well, that's the reason why I have 43 bounces on that one story.
Right, if you're writing a reasonably interesting story, if you're being professional, which we might talk about at some point, you're only competing with about the upper 10% at that juncture.
Right.
30 stories, that's all you have to beat.
Yeah.
This is my personal theory, is that what you have to beat, everybody in here is good enough, frankly, to beat the top 30 if you work at it. You all are.
Can be good enough to beat the top 30. A trained monkey can do it. Come on.
Yeah. All you have to do is beat the top 30, and because the top 30 is going to include the 10 or so from the big name authors and the other 20 competent people who are there. You guys were all competent. I mean, yes, we were reaming you, but you guys were all competent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I just want you guys to be aware of that this was deliberately harsh.
And even if you don't sell this story, keep writing the next one and the next one and send those out there. Maybe this one story just doesn't fit somewhere, you know, but keep sending different ones out. Eventually they're going to find one, and your writing is going to get good enough from all this writing you've been doing that you're going to get one that fits that magazine perfectly.
And sometimes you'll have a reputation and you'll be able to sell some of those trunk stories. Though.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whip them out.
And you'll make a ton of money. That was sarcastic.
Just enroll in our famous writing
school. Only $5,000. Okay, be professional. We need to talk about
be
that.
Be professional, folks.
The reason I do not send out personal feedback on any rejection is that too often I get an angry email back. So I just don't do it anymore. So authors are shooting themselves in the foot by doing this, because I could be giving you some helpful advice on your writing, but
I just don't deal with it anymore. Yes. Is
it something that
I've always wondered, if I get personal feedback back from an editor, right? Is it okay to send an email saying, thank you for the feedback, it's really improved my story, finished whatever? Or is that just another email in your inbox?
You know, so it's maybe a nice, but maybe it's just annoying, you know? We get a lot of email.
Yeah. It's always good.
You know, someone who is actually giving you nice, really detailed feedback, I think, yeah, send a thank you.
So depending on the amount of effort they put into it.
Yeah. Right. And if they really are taking the time to give you a whole bunch of advice, then yeah, thank you.
Five pages, single-spaced from Eric Heidemann. That's what that is what I got on one of my rejections.
Not guaranteeing everybody.
One of my acceptances was six pages single spaced, which and that was the acceptance. And I was like, okay, thank you, Eric. I'm glad.
Can I have the contract?
Can I have the contract now? But it was awesome. I mean, I couldn't believe I got five pages single spaced worth of stuff on a story you rejected from me. It was great.
But so. Seriously, don't argue about rejections. Don't argue about guidelines. Don't argue. Because this is a very, very, very small pond, quite frankly.
And
we will remember you if
we get together and exchange anecdotes and names.
Yeah, I have those emails saying.
Writers all the time. It's one of the best markets for new writers.
I know. And I get these nasty emails, you know.
Is there some secret code that you can put in your cover letter that says, I would in fact be happy to hear anything you have to say, and I'm not in
the This is a fantasy magazine that's just not going to happen.
Like right now, Apex is using a publisher. I don't think there's a method for you to do that.
Mm-hmm. There is.
But we're going back to email stories again. Yeah, we're getting off of Hey Publisher. So.
Huh.
I think there have been people who have asked for feedback, and I think at the beginning maybe I gave it to them, but I don't know if I would again now. Maybe.
I used to regularly get people explaining to me what an idiot I was for having taken it. You know, if somebody, however harsh, if an editor responds personally to your work, that means they think there's something to it. You've got some talent, or they wouldn't be wasting their time. Including in our guidelines, please note that Eric and the Toto staff put a lot of time and care into helping promising writers hone their craft. Writers of originality and vision often need help presenting their material so that their desired effect gets across to readers. That's what editors are supposed to be for. To be helpful, we think it's necessary to be honest, always keeping in mind that a criticism of the current version of your story isn't a criticism of you. If you see personal editorial feedback as enemy action, please don't waste our time. We have an anthology to put out. If you like getting feedback, we look forward to reading your stuff. And that pretty much has handled the problem.
Yeah.
You would think. Other things, don't badmouth people online or in conferences or anywhere else. Jason Sizemore is our owner and editor, and he just took away someone's contract to get published because she badmouthed him online and said he was a terrible editor.
Wow.
And that Apex was a terrible magazine. And if so, why would she want us to publish her? But
eight or
your pain.
That's why.
Yeah.
She wants
submit something on a Mac and it comes across weird on a PC.
And
maybe.
That happened in this, which is which is why I took full responsibility for the lack of whatever. I don't have Word on my machine, and so everything's going through OpenOffice and then getting put back into Doc.
Right.
And so somewhere along the line, I think, and I also was double spacing things that weren't double spaced because I wanted there to be some font sizes to 12 point. But I kept everything in the same font style. I tried to keep the italics if you had italics, and I tried to make it as close to what you submitted to me as possible, you know, and stuff. But paragraphs may have gotten, you know, that the paragraph indentation, I think, in that one thing, I bet that was my fault. Because I was trying to rush towards the end to get this all together.
There are some platform problems.
Yeah, we try to give, most people will try to give you the benefit of the doubt, but I know there are slush readers on the Apex team that if you do not follow the submission guidelines, you are automatically rejected. So just be careful. You don't want to go through all that work.
That's the thing. They're constantly
to go and then just get rejected without anybody having even written your story.
They're constantly to work with
right.
them, so you don't want to give them.
You only have so much time.
Just to say about 4,800, but the overwhelming majority of them didn't make it all the way out of the envelope. There.
Yeah. Well, you know, they were paying so much money, and it was a, you know, a sense of oh, you didn't read our submission guidelines. You know, I mean, I got reamed by one magazine because I had widow orphan protection on my...
Which is the most ridiculous thing to get reamed over.
Yeah, I got reamed, actually reamed in a rejection letter.
Was it terrible?
Yes, it was. And over the widow orphan protection thing. And I was like, really? But it was, okay, I didn't... I had read their guidelines, but I obviously didn't know how to turn it off in my work thing. So I was like, I spent time getting out a manual, figuring it out, so the next time I submitted, it was off.
That's such a ridiculous thing to do.
But that, I remember getting reamed over it, and, you know, it was in their guidelines. So I think he was actually within rights to ream me over it, but it was a very interesting rejection.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'd like to thank you guys for taking the time to do this.
Yes, indeed.
Very helpful.
Yeah, and I would like to thank all of the knife, and that's part of the reason why I put one of my own in there, was I wanted to feel the stab as well, and, you know.
Your home address.
yeah. APAC, if anybody's interested,
do it.
Send it in.
It's
eye-opening. I really highly recommend it.
What's the qualification?
Of any qualifications. I think read the magazine. I think they ask you to tell something you liked about one of the stories, maybe one you didn't like. I think that's what I did.
Do those in Dreamhaven bookstores have it?
Yeah.
Dreamhaven? Yeah. Some of the really early ones when Jason was still actually
in. Anybody know?
123.
So are there any last minute questions? Yeah.
There were no tears in any of the eyes.
I know. There were some wet eyes. They may not have been tears, but I saw a few eyes that were a little bit wet and unhappy.
It's a hard thing to sit there and take.
This is a professional activity. Yeah. So you have the opportunity to get professional feedback. I mean, this is a craft as well as an art. I think this is a wonderful.
Driving the knife home.
We said please first.
Very professional. They've gotten rejection here. They made me feel like a 12-year-old wrote them to me. You know, like, mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's hard to feel like I want to behave professionally when editors are writing me such.
Well, and yes.
Well, someone who said, my monkey flushed this down the toilet. And it was like...
Well, I don't know if, like, everybody's seen, there's, like, an article that was been going around. I've seen it a few times with famous authors' rejections, and some of them are just nasty.
That's just horrible.
Like, the worst things you've ever read. And so that kind of makes me feel better. You know, even if I get a nasty one, yeah. You know, they still got published, and they made a lot of money, some of them, and, you know, they got some really
some
nasty
weird, incoherent ones. Too.
Oh, yeah, like, I don't know if they were on drugs.
Yeah, well, the ones that always puzzle me are the ones where I wonder if they actually read my story or they mixed it up with somebody else's story. Because they said, I really don't like this in stories. And I'm like, where did I have a zombie in my story? I didn't have a zombie in the story. I don't know.
I think it was from Weird Tales a long time ago that I got one of those. And they went on and on about pirates in my rejection. And I'm like, there are pirates in this story. What are you? And then I got one from InnerZone that I know was a rejection because he eventually said he wasn't going to buy the story, but I found out all about the guy's vacation in Europe first. And I'm like, Jesse, I know that you try a lot of scotch, so I'm assuming that's what happened here.
Well, also, I think that in some ways that the editors will build up a relationship with you if they see your slush mm-hmm. across their many, many times, because you've got that tenacity, even if they haven't bought it. I mean, I'm still trying to remember Laura Winters, when she was sending a story to FNSF every month. I mean, she was trying to very hard, and at one point she got... Yes, and she got this note going, you know, sooner or later we're going to converge. And that was at the end of the rejection. It was just simply sooner or later we're going to converge. And that made her damn. And she was like, yes. And 3 stories later, actually they did. So, the editor was just trying to say, just keep going. So, sometimes you can become a familiar face. And sometimes I think that's why the editor is sending the personal note, is because you've become, one of their favorite people to reject.
Well, and you're establishing professionalism.
Yes.
They can depend on you to be a professional, to act, kindly and not send nasty emails. Yeah. We'll recognize those names after a while.
Well, in the wild, just, be aware that you might start looking for similar. To FNSF now runs Fantasy and Lightspeed. Charles
Gilder has a phenomenal memory. And when he was introduced to Rich Henderson, whose online nickname was Roach, mm-hmm. he went at a panel or something. I remember him turning and go, "You're the bug girl." and she was like stunned because he had never accepted any of her things, but wow. She'd always had a little signature that she had on her cover letter that had the little roach at the very bottom, because that was her nickname, was Roach. And he's like, "Yeah, you're the one with the cute little She was just, and it was like, it was very funny. I was like, yeah.
How cool was that?
Yeah. And I think editors are always going to be a little bit more favorable to people that they recognize. So get out on Twitter, get out to conventions,
I'm sorry, that takes up my writing time, and I'm not going on Twitter. I'm not going on.
Well, the thing is, you can comport That's yourself well with people. Too many people go, and this goes back to the professionalism. Too many people go about it the wrong way at conventions. They show up waving manuscripts or trying to monopolize the editor's time.
Don't pitch them in the bathroom.
Don't pitch them in the bathroom. A long time, and I've been going to MiniCon for a long time with Jane Yolen. And the first time I met Jane Yolen, I looked at her and smiled, "Look, it's Adam Stempel's mom." She's just somebody who comes to MiniCon, and she's Adam's mom, and we talk and stuff. And then we're on a panel one day, and it was the Ask an Editor panel, actually. Or ask a writer. And she said, you got to develop relationships with editors and stuff, and you got to do it the right way, and you got to be professional about it, and eventually we'll get to the point where, if you write competently, I might ask you for a story. She said, I've known Michael now for a long time. I might ask him for a woman who can give me money and sell my stories. You're just Jane, this person who I had become friends with. And so you make that selecting manuscripts under bathroom stalls, and cornering people in elevators.
I just watched an interview with Jim Butcher not too long ago, writes the Dresden Files, and he said he was at a convention and he'd had the first book accepted, and he talked to the person who accepted it, and he told her, "You rejected me before." She said, "I didn't know you then."
Yes.
So she looked at the book again and decided to pick it.
Terry,
I was going to ask, do editors read other publications? In fact, do they generally have a knowledge of what other magazines are out there and who the other authors are?
Depends on the editor.
We generally have a good knowledge, though, of what other magazines are good, mostly by who gets read for year's bests and other awards and stuff. Which is a really good way to tell, more so than pay, because pay is very inconsistent in small presses and semi-pros. But you're looking for... We know which magazines, the anthologies and that sort of thing. And so those showing up in your cover letter, they generate you an automatic pass. At Fantasy Magazine, if you had fantasy, this kind of fantasy, right there in my guidelines, why are you sending me science fiction?
Which won't be a problem now that Lightspeed and Fantasy Magazine emerging.
Well, exactly, because when Lightspeed started, I was just about to leave when Lightspeed started. And we had gotten the order of, if we got a professional level science fiction story at Fantasy, we could go ahead and if, we were reading 15 stories that day, and it was the 15th story and we hated it.
And do this, especially when I baked, I said, pretty please. So thank you guys for coming to do this. I'm amazed that we have so. Thank everybody once again who was willing to put themselves on the line. I know this was hard. Mm-hmm. This was not as much fun, I think, as it's going to be when we have the coroner over. That's going to be okay.
Just plans for corpses.
Or just parts.
Actually, Actually, I can tell you how to ship a corpse if you want to sit down sometimes, because I was licensed to do it.
This is why he's now a slush reader. There's still bodies on the table when he's done. Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Speculative Fiction Writers Group podcast. The MinSpec podcast is produced by Aberstaff and Wiebe, recorded and engineered by myself, Conrad Zero. Whether you're an experienced writer who wants to help others, or an aspiring writer who wants to make your writing better, join us on the web at meetup.com/MNSPEC.